Welcome to Survival Mode Disrupted, the podcast for those who are done performing, done people pleasing, and done living life on autopilot. I'm your host, Leticia, the Survival Mode Disruptor, and this is where we create disruptive, unapologetic transformations for those who are ready to exit survival mode and reclaim their power. Every episode is your permission slip to burn the rule book, break the cycle, and finally build a life that feels like yours. So let's disrupt everything that's holding you back and start living life on your own terms. Welcome to Survival Mode Disrupted. This is your trigger warning. This podcast contains unfiltered conversations about trauma, abuse, and survival. Discretion is advised. This is not therapy or medical advice, just real people sharing real stories. So please take care of yourself and pause if you need to. If this conversation hits home, grab the book Survival Mode Exit Plan, your raw, unapologetic blueprint to break free. Available now by scanning the QR code or clicking the link in the comments. Hello, 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 and welcome back to Survival Mode Disrupted. I am Leticia, the Survival Mode Disruptor, and I am super excited to have Melissa here today. Melissa, why don't you introduce yourself?
Yes, hi, thank you for having me. So I'm Melissa Winger, and I am the author of a book called Who Cares? The Real Patient Experience. And it is about my son. I have a son who is now 29 years old, and he has significant disabilities from a chromosome disorder. So he has medical needs that affect every single organ system and severe developmental disability and autism. I wrote the book to share our journey through birth all the way through to long-term care.
Very nice. So, you know, we're talking about survival mode on this podcast. Mm-hmm. I would really love to hear about your journey to survival mode.
Yes, thank you. It was hard to actually figure out that I was in survival mode. But when you have it, I was had my child at 18 years old. And from that moment, it was medical care and treating him throughout his entire life. And so his needs came first. All of his stuff made priority over mine. And I just want to focus on one story because I think this is kind of explains how difficult this is. And this is coming from trauma that my son had versus me as his mother having to or trying to protect him. Okay. So just one incident happened. So we are reliant on caregivers in all aspects of his life. So this happened in high school, and remind you, he's nonverbal and he's very medically fragile. So just what happened between him going from one class to another with an aide, this aide had left him to go do something else. And so my son was in the hallway, and he got a bunch of kids came running around the corner, and he got kind of pushed into a big cement pole. And being that he has medical issues, his bones are quite fragile. So he had broken almost every bone on one half of his body. So his arm, his hip, his femur, laying on the ground, the aide had finally come back to him and actually lifted him up from his good arm, dragged him up a flight of stairs, and pushed him into a metal chair in front of the office and left him there. And my son goes into shock if he's in pain. So he doesn't cry, he doesn't yell, he can't ask for help because again, he can't speak. And it took a while for someone to come out of that office and realize something is wrong with him. His arm was three times the size it was supposed to be. They call 911. Again, people in the office didn't know. They just saw my son sitting in front of the office. Call an ambulance. We meet him at the hospital. He looks like he's in shock. He's barely blinking. And all I was told was he fell. He fell. And I was like, that fell from what? The roof? How does someone get injured like this from a fall? And so we treated him, and he's ended up with major surgery, and now he's in a wheelchair, and no answers from the school except for he fell. Finally, an investigation happened. They looked at all the videos and got the story of what happened. So immediately filed complaint against the school with the Department of Education, and it came back that there was no liability or no accountability because aides, they call them like paraprofessionals, they're not medically trained to identify an injury. And that was that. Now, that's one story. That has happened. Things like this have happened to him throughout the course of his life. And this is where I struggle because I have, as a mom, I have one job to do, protect my child. And I couldn't protect him. I couldn't protect him from any of these events. Events that happened by, medical error in the hospital to him, to later at his group home. And it has been quite, and I still really have not been able to process it, if that makes any sense. But because my job is to protect him and I couldn't.
As a mother, I sat here in pain as you told that story. Angry, even. And I can imagine, and probably not in the fullest, how this impacted you. Because, as you said, your one role as his mother is to protect her. How did you deal with, and we'll stick to this story, how did you deal with having to process all of this? Because it's not just his healing, it's now having to manage the investigation and deal with the outcome and the lack of accountability. Let's talk about that a bit more. Like, how was that for you?
I feel like it was sort of going through a grief process. You're angry, you're in denial, right? Then you have to just accept it. I have a problem accepting it. I don't want to accept it. I want there to be justice. And I feel that this is a community, or this is a group of people that have no justice and have no voice in our system. And it has caused me so much anger because I am tired of having to defend that my son has value in this world. Yes, he might have disabilities, but he is a human being and he is not more or less than any of us, right? And I've had to defend that. And that is an extremely sad place to be, that you have to defend. And I'm going to be very honest, is that I'm tired of having to defend it because I feel like you should not have to, that the human beings are human beings. They don't have a value in our society. And I realize that they absolutely do. It's not talked about, but it's definitely something that happens. The just, and this was later dealing with a same kind of an incident at the group home that he lives in now, a few years ago. And it was, you go to the police, and they were very honest with me and said, yeah, we don't even look into these cases of potential harm because the witnesses are unreliable. And so they're never prosecuted. And just all of these things that I learned over the years was awful, just awful. And it's like you just had to accept that if you wanted help, that you needed help to take care of my son, who is 24/7 care, that's almost something you just have to deal with, that there might be people that do harm out there. And so it's a very sad place to be. And then on the flip side, there's the shame involved because I tried to speak up through social media. And the response I got was, you put him there. You trusted this caregiver. You should have homeschooled him. You should have protected him. You should not put him in a group home. You should not rely on caregivers. You take care of him. You're his mother. It was like people. Not, I didn't even realize that I would get the finger pointed at me. that you put them in these situations, which is even worse.
I am really happy that I muted myself, the amount of grunts out
I
of
know.
irritation, right? And
Yeah.
this is me standing on the sidelines listening. And this is not something I expected to bring up, but I'm going to bring it up because it's something that infuriates me immensely. Society is very quick to blame the victim.
Yes.
They have no consideration for how their lack of consideration is so damaging to the people who are experiencing a disjustice, even in the way that they operate in life. And it pisses me off, to say the least, right? And I'm sitting here and I had so many other questions for you, but this story, I mean, and I can imagine that they are amplified and so many more because he is 29 and has never been able to advocate for himself. And that role has solely been on you. And you did say, before you actually started going into the story, that you didn't even recognize that you were in survival mode. Do you, and I want you to be honest here, do you think, based on the continued responsibility, that you have exited survival mode? Or are you in a space that is just maybe better functioning?
No, I have turned my anger and my disappointment in our society into advocacy and writing a book and not going into the sidelines and be like, well, that happened. My mind frame switched to, well, that's never going to happen again.
Okay. So
And I can't,
let's talk about what caused that shift, right? So what was it that made you recognize that you were in survival mode? And then what created that switch for you to now move into a space of empowerment, right? Using your voice instead of silencing yourself, which often happens when we are in survival mode.
Yeah, and it came in when I started researching on maybe the first few times I was like, okay, well, that's accident. Didn't that was purposeful, well, whatever. And then it kept happening, and that's when I just dove into the research. And then I dove into the research on this happens to so many vulnerable adults, people with disabilities. That's when the switch happened, that I realized I'm not going to get anywhere just sitting and being angry and disconnecting from people because I didn't want anyone to give me that shame, that victim, the blame the victim thing. I was like, not going to have that. And I knew my story. I knew what my son went through. And I had this, it's not going to happen to the next person. And I had to take that into, it's not, we tend to sue a lot of people in the United States. That wasn't going to happen. That I'm not suing people. Also, because I learned that they don't pay much attention to these cases. So now I have to go and I have to change the system. And that made me feel like it switched to maybe then my son was given to me, and my son has a chromosome disorder that he's the only one that has it. There's not even a name for it. He's missing half of his fourth chromosome. That maybe I was given, he came into this world and he outlived all of his expectancies. He's only expected to live to 5, 6 years old. He's 29. I thought, we have a purpose. What happened to my son? Unforgivable, and I still feel horrible for it. But maybe it gives light to all the things that happen to people that don't have a voice, they don't have an advocate. And we need to use our story and say, no more. No. People with disabilities have a voice. And it gave me this sense of, wow, you can make a difference and you can change things. This is not a group of people that protest and are loud and screaming and going to their government officials because they don't tend to not have a voice. They sit in silence. And this is people in nursing homes and assisted livings, and they just sit and they suffer. And I said, no, no more. I'm writing this book, talking about everything, and going on platforms like yours and saying, no, we're not going to deal with this anymore.
I love that. I one of the things I and I talk about the accident of survival mode all the time. And I always liken it to three phases. And you literally just spoke to that, right? You became aware of the circumstances that you were in. You had to reprogram the way that you were thinking about yourself, right? You took radical ownership in that reprogramming, which allowed you to reinvent the way that you showed up, right? It went from, oh, I'm hopeless to I'm hopeful. And I'm so empowered that not only am I speaking up for myself, I'm speaking up for everybody else because we're not talking about this enough, you know? That is so amazing. But I want to go back to the victim shaming element for a second, right? Because if I'm honest, one of the reasons why I pivoted into this particular area, talking about the residual impacts of trauma and really wanting to bring awareness to the wider audience, was because I was highly triggered by the commentary I saw after Cassie came out about Diddy, right? And I don't want to go into like the specifics about that, but what really bothered me is how people were so vocal in tearing this woman down who had the ability, even after years, the courage to step up and say it's not enough. And it was something that was like, I want to speak up on this. And this is why I was like, I didn't expect to have this conversation with you today, but I think it's a conversation that we need to have, right? I don't think people recognize how damaging victim shaming is. I don't think they recognize how far-reaching the effects of it are. I mean, you spoke about the shame, the anger. Can we go into it a little bit more? Because I really want the audience to wrap their mind around a simple flipping comment really has a long-lasting effect.
That is where we are in this world now with the quick social media. I can say whatever I want. Takes 2 seconds and then you shut your phone off or whatever and you don't think of it again. You just, I'm going to say my piece and it might be extremely hurtful. And that's what happened to me. I care what people think about me. And it's hard when people are like, well, you shouldn't care. It's like, well, that's not going to happen tomorrow. It's like you care. And also I had the expectation that people would be behind me and that didn't happen. So I wasn't ready for it. I wasn't ready for that. And not that anyone should have to be ready for it. And that's when I shut down social media and I didn't go on social media for almost a year. I just shut it down and I got depressed and I didn't want to hear from anyone. And that put a stop to the fix, like the stop of my voice being able to fix the system. And that was awful for one comment to have that much effect. That I stopped and I didn't. Maybe I would have never written the book or spoke up about his incident because of that one ridiculous off-the-cuff comment coming from one person that I don't know her background. I don't know where she came from. Maybe she had a very good point because something happened to her. I don't know. But that's not my area to figure out. But I'm sad that I lost a year of advocacy because of one comment.
It's so important that we talk about this. I actually
Yeah.
wrote a post a couple of weeks ago about I actually view victim shaming no different from abuse. And
Yeah.
it's oftentimes it's not intentional, right?
No.
But what it does, it silences
Yeah,
people,
it does.
you know? And we already suffer in silence. So to have the courage to speak up and then be frozen
Yep.
as a result of, and I say it's ignorance, right? I'm not going to sugarcoat it. I think a lot of times people's inconsiderate responses is due to ignorance. We don't have enough conversations about emotions. We don't have enough conversations about the impact that other people's actions have on our well-being and our mental health. And I think if we did, I think it will open up the opportunity for us to make changes. But we push it under the rug. You know, somebody might have clocked that, you know, it impacted you. But what do I do about that? I mean, that's your stuff, right? No, it's everybody's stuff. It's everybody's stuff. And unfortunately, you know, in society, we tend not to care until the problem is on our doorstep. And
Correct.
then when it's on our doorstep, what happens, Melissa? We want
We
sympathy,
do. We do. We
right?
want to ignore all the stuff we have said in the past, and well, because now it happened to me. And that's a, I realize that's a choice. And I, at that moment, I chose to give that person the power to take me down. And I'm upset about that. Yeah. Like, why did I let her do it? I let her take me down. That could have been a choice. Not that I even realized it at the time. It just was hurtful. And so I said, well, that's it. I'm not putting my story out there anymore. Because I also wondered, okay, that was one voice. And then I made this assumption that the majority thought this way, which
With
is
small
ridiculous.
voices,
Yeah.
yes. But
Because
you know
my
what?
brain just went, oh, is that what the world thinks? Well, no. That's just what this lady thought. Yeah.
And see, you bring up two more interesting things, right? Excuse me. How much control we actually do have, right? Like, I remember someone saying to me, you know, your anger is a choice.
Yeah.
Your anger. And I remember thinking, what are you talking about?
Can't
How
control
could I
this.
choose this, right?
No.
But we have way more control over our lives than we recognize. And I think one of the gifts of exiting survival mode
Yeah.
is that radical ownership that we tend to take. Like, I've recognized that I've wasted a year. I've recognized I've wasted decades here,
Yeah.
and now I'm going to really push forward to step into my purpose and be impactful. And the
Yeah.
second thing that really was interesting was your thought process. You mentioned, like, you know,
Yeah.
I had to think about it differently.
I had
You
to.
know, it's yeah, it all. Even though people's journeys are the same, it kind of all ends up like this, like almost like a rebellion against what we don't discuss and what we don't talk about.
Yeah. I had to realize that. I had to realize that I was facing one person's opinion, and then I manifested that into I thinking half the world thinks this, which is, and then I had to just go, so what? There's people like my son, and there's that need someone to speak up, and then not to engage in that conversation of with that person, right? Because like, no, your comment is yours, and you're free to make it. And I'm not going to engage in that. I don't owe you an explanation of why I chose to have, caregivers in my child's life. I'm not going to engage in that. I'm going to focus on my mission. And somewhat, I still can't because I still talk about it. And mind you, this was what, oh gosh, almost 10 years ago, still in the back of my head, right? This person. And it's like I just had to not give that any power. I said, no, the mission is more important. The people's opinions, and I need to protect, and I need to have a voice for all the people that are suffering in silence in care facilities.
I love that. I love the power that you harnessed as a result of being able to change the way you framed it. And
And
that's what it
also what
boils
I'm,
down to.
yeah. And what
Go
I'm
ahead.
doing, and also what I realize is that it's going to all usually be negative. There's not going to be any praise because, people don't even understand what you're, right? People in long-term care and stuff, they don't, they live in the system and they just feel like that's just what it is and they deal with it and they live with it. And what's sad is they don't expect anybody to do anything different, And we've dealt with since my child was born, in 1996, and I thought, well, if he ever needs long-term care, it'll be fixed by then. I was
I mean, we chuckle, but the reality, I mean, it's disappointing, you know.
Yes.
We progress, but I think oftentimes it's in the wrong direction, or you know, this conversation has really been, it was maybe unexpected, Melissa, I think.
Because I yeah and it's also because something it did happen to me, but it more so happened to my son. So when I hear about these trauma and pain, I just like, no, I also had that because being his mother, it didn't directly happen. These things didn't, my limbs weren't broken like my son's were, but traumatic. So I think, any
Traumatic.
caregiver or parent or and you watch a loved one go through this, it's there's a trauma there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that it goes back to the residual impacts of trauma. It does not just affect the person, the quote unquote victim. It has a ripple effect to those that are around them, those that have to interact and, you know. Yeah. So, what are you working on currently, Melissa, and where can our listeners connect with you?
Yeah, so I have a website that kind of talks about all these issues and where I'm gonna sort of speak and tell my story. That's www.whocaresbooks, books with an S, whocaresbooks.com. And then you can find a link to get my book. I'll also be posting tips for people that are dealing with the healthcare system and how to advocate for yourself. And yeah, and just if I can ask just the regular, just everyday people that if you see people, vulnerable adults, disabilities, nursing homes, not to look away and to help and to speak up for people that can't speak up for themselves.
I love that. And do you have one takeaway for the listeners who might maybe resonate with your journey to and through survival mode? What is one key takeaway that they can action?
I think it's going to be that we need to connect with each other. We need to have the conversations. We have to realize that people have a that people with vulnerabilities like disabilities or older generations that they need help and they need us to speak up and not don't look away. That you have a voice, you are of value.
Yeah, you have a voice
Yes.
and you have value.
Yes.
Yes. Powerful, powerful. So, listeners, thank you so much, Melissa, again. Thank you for your time. I mean, this conversation was very enlightening. You took me through all the emotions. And listeners, you know, as a reminder, you were not built to break, but you damn sure were not built to just survive. Disrupt the cycle, reclaim your life, and thrive on your own terms. I will see you next week.